maybe we should trust our employees and treat them as adults.
Wow, that's as adults, trust employees. That's a lot.
The other day, I was at school in the middle of the day because I had to meet a teacher for some reason, and I was there, and somebody who met me there was like, you can do it because you're the boss. And I'm like, no, I can do it because in my company, anyone can do it. Hello, I'm Michael.
I'm Radek.
And this is The Podcast,
a sounding board for interesting ideas and insights. We discuss books we read and want to share with you,
as well as technology and productivity, which is what we do by day working on our app, Nozbe.
Or whatever else comes to mind.
And today, the book, another book comes to mind, right?
That's right.
All right. There is this book, Under New Management.
By David Burkes, that's right.
David Burkes. Yeah, Under New Management. And the book talks about some revolutionary different ideas of how to run a business. And why do we want to change the way we run a business? Or why do we want to actually talk about these revolutionary ideas?
Right. It's kind of funny. Last week, we talked about the startup culture and how much of that is kind of wrong and broken.
Yeah.
And this book is more about questioning the traditional kind of culture of business and enterprise and corporations and how those things tend to run and kind of offer alternatives or new ideas of like how to run things, how to manage people and the team, like ideas for different kinds of policies that are not very common today in business, but might be good ideas.
Yeah. Okay. But anyway, I think we wanted to actually start from the end, right? So to actually ask ourselves, if the companies are working, the business works, people go to work, they get their salaries paid, and they do their work. What's wrong with the system? What's wrong with how people work?
I actually really like the analogy the book itself made in the epilogue. It made an analogy to the internal combustion engine. So essentially, the gas engine in a car. An internal combustion engine works, right? It has for a century. It powers the world. There's a billion cars in the world and it works, right? But it's only like 30% efficient at converting energy from the fuel's chemical energy into kinetic energy of the vehicle. So like, even though it works, it doesn't mean we can't do better. And we do, like, if you look at the energy efficiency of electric vehicles, it's much better and it takes some time. But when you break through this status quo, it seems obviously better.
Yeah, 30% is not really a lot. It's like the same thing goes to swimming. Because when I prepare for a triathlon, I read somewhere also that when we swim, 10% of our energy is converted into actually movement forward, or even less than 10%. So we are not really good swimmers because we're not dolphins. But that's the thing. If it's 30% efficient, great, but maybe we can do better than that. And that's why in this book, the author is questioning, maybe there is another way of running a business, or maybe we should think about our employees, our team, differently.
Yeah, it mentioned a number, a statistic, that supposedly about 15% of workers worldwide are actually engaged by their work. It's not entirely clear what engaged means, but what I get out of it is that like 85% of the people feel like their job kind of sucks. They don't try to do their best at all. They just want to get by, get paid. But like it means that the worker doesn't actually enjoy the job. They don't try, and the organization suffers from it also, because like, If you're not engaged by your work, then you're not going to be very productive, right?
Yeah. So for me, and something that this book really, the whole notion, I mean, the whole theme that permeates the whole book, for me, is this revolutionary notion that shouldn't be revolutionary in the first place, is that maybe we should trust our employees and treat them as adults.
Wow, that's, as adults, trust employees, that's a lot.
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, when you're a child and you're at school and you have to do something, you have an exam to prepare, or for example, you have an assignment, the teacher trusts that you will do the assignment, and you if you don't do an assignment, you're gonna be punished. But if you do, the teacher doesn't really ask, when are you going to do the assignment? The teacher doesn't ask you how you're going to do the assignment. The teacher just, helps you, outlines what the assignment is all about and gives you a deadline. And yet, in many companies, what happens is that we don't trust our employees. We micromanage them. The traditional way is to micromanage people, is to not trust people, is to put people in their place and tell them what to do and tell them not to think and just treat them as mindless cogs.
Right. I would push back on the analogy with school. You're a bit older. You might have forgot, but
yeah.
School is definitely not a place where people would trust you, where they would treat you as adults, where they would care about your opinion, about your anything. School is very much like, it's designed to be actually very much like the corporate world, which actually is a lot like kind of the military is one analogy that sticks to my mind. Like there's a hierarchy, there's a general at the top, and there's some people below them, and then you're just given an assignment, you're told what to do, and you do it, right? And you get micromanaged because, like, no one trusts anyone. You're just it's all about control, and that kind of creates a bunch of like really broken incentives.
Yeah, and especially if you there was actually a statistic that most of this, I mean, a substantial number of CEOs of Fortune 500 companies are ex, military. So makes a little sense. But anyway, trust. So maybe really my analogy wasn't that good with school. I it's been a while with school for me. But the fact that of trusting people, there is this saying in Germany, in German language, trust is good, but control is better. Mm-hmm. And I would use it the other way around. Control is good, but trust is better, because it's really hard to do your job if you don't trust people around you. A micromanager, a person who would who doesn't trust people, he's really getting exhausted, and then he works 12 hours a day, or I don't know how many, to just do his job and other people's jobs, or actually manage and control. So anyway, the idea of the book is that we should trust employees more and trust the team more, and this shows in many of the chapters.
Right. So I suppose we should give a few examples.
Yep.
So there was one about performance reviews. This is such a corporate thing, and in a lot of organizations, there's like this notion of a stack ranking. So You like annually you do a review of an employee and you rank them as, say, outstanding, good, or like poor performance, and stack ranking means that there's a forced curve. So say 20% outstanding, 70% good, 10% poor performance, and outstanding means you're going to get a promotion, and poor performance means improve or you'll be fired. And That's so broken. It's supposed to be a carrot and a stick and motivation to improve yourself, but all it does is make people competitive with each other instead of collaborate, right? Like you're not going to work together or share information or do things for the benefit of the whole organization. You're put against one another because like no one trusts you to actually care and be good about your job, and no one actually cares to watch you in a in a reasonable way with a quick feedback loop. Instead, do a performance review like once a year, seriously, and then like have the feeling that, well, you better do good or you might be fired. Well, that's not very useful.
Yeah, I have a close example of a company where a person I know works, and they told me that the performance reviews are the most important part of year because everybody's anxious, everybody's scared, everybody's trying to make up points or whatever else they have there as a metric, and it actually, if when they receive a poor performance review, they actually sue the company. So it's really wow. It really creates the amount, I mean the trust there, right? I mean you know, so for me this is totally ridiculous. I think it is good to have feedback loops, which we discussed before,
yeah,
and to have feedback loops with people that you work with. But for example, what I really liked about going to Apple Store was when I was first time in the USA and buying my first MacBook Air, this guy said, you know, Michael, if you don't want to buy this thing now, don't worry, you know, come back later, you know, ask any one of us, because we don't work on commission. So whoever you ask, no problem. I mean, they will help you, right?
Yeah.
And also, the other time when I was there, somebody was helping me out, choose something, and then they would pass their friend to finish the sale because he was more knowledgeable for what I wanted to buy. And there was no problem for them to pass somebody else, you know, who knew more about the stuff I wanted to buy. Because again, they don't work on a commission like per person. They will receive a commission as an entire store. So everybody knows that they work for the good of the store and not for the good of the you know, each individual account.
Yeah, in today's corporate world, there's a bunch of these tools, like again with the performance reviews, with like paying you commissions instead of a salary, that have this aura of rationality and like this is scientific, like we're actually measuring things and like this should be good. But this is old thinking that has not been verified with the reality, because it totally forgets about the fact that you're just, you know, in order to try to control people and you know, because of these systems you create, because there is no actual trust, there's a bunch of side effects like what you say, in many stores people are paid commission, and so you won't get the best possible service because they will push to sell now, to do it themselves, like there's no collaboration.
Yeah, and in another book which I read about selling and about sales teams, the advice was also contrary to the popular advice, is that the sales team, if you want to have a commission, then the commission is on this whole sales team, because then mm-hmm. people help each other, then people support each other, and when somebody's missing and then the other one steps in, helps close the sale, and they know that they are together in this, and if they make the sales quota or whatever that they have, they are together, they are working for each other and not against each other, they are not pitted against each other, which is what, like in many companies, is a standard procedure.
Yep, that makes a lot of sense. I also wanted to briefly touch on what you said about feedback loops. Performance reviews on some level seem like a good idea because it's a feedback loop, but feedback, that's not a good feedback loop. First of all, feedback loops should be much, much tighter.
Yeah.
Like if you want this to actually be helpful, you as a manager ought to have frequent conversations with employees, and instead of like assessing them, judging them in a way that makes them competitive and scared and anxious instead of focused on their job, you know, give them honest feedback, but don't assess them, don't give them grades, like give them feedback, coach them, show them how to improve, and like cut out all the BS that's not necessary.
Yeah, and I think we can move to this one of the other chapters here in the book about employees first, customers second, mm-hmm. is the fact that that's why it's important to have this trust in the team, because this motivation, the idea of these commissions and all these things comes from the fact that people still believe, or these companies still believe, that people are motivated by money. Money is a factor, of course. People like to work for money because they have to pay the rent, they have to have some money. So money is important, but it's not the most important thing. And these kind of old school thinking of only commissions, motivating by commissions, pitting people against each other, is saying money is the most important thing. And when you look at our team, when you look at other teams that we know, there are other factors, like working on a stuff that's interesting, that's challenging for you, developing yourself, being in a team that you like, having people around that you like, that you trust, and again, being treated as an adult, being treated as a person who can be trusted. All these things, having a boss who's not a dick, right? So all these things together create a great team. And again, it comes from the trust. That's why I really like this invented hierarchy, that it's important that you put the team first, the employees first, and the customers second, because customers will be happy when they will be served by happy employees. When they will be served by employees who are not happy, who are not satisfied, who are just doing their job. So the customer will see that, and they will not buy, or they will not become a customer, or they will not extend their, you know, subscription, or, you know, whatever relationship.
Yeah, happy employees lead to good service, which leads to happy customers, which leads to profit. Not that hard, is it?
Exactly, and that's why in many companies, the companies forget, and the bosses forget, that your sales clerk is the person who's in touch with the customer. Mm-hmm. So if you don't treat the sales clerk right, the sales clerk will not be working well, and the customer will see that, or will sense that, or will be treated just wrong and will just go away. The sales clerk is the person who's going to be in touch, so he's there, and that's why you know, we really have to also cherish our customer support team in Nozomi and make sure that they have good tools, good, you know, they're being treated right, they're happy with their work, because they receive all the feedback and also negative feedback on our software, and they have to be able to serve our customers well and solve their problems and help them thrive. And they are the ones who are in touch with our customers.
Yep. And how about this order? It's another inverted hierarchy. And this is obviously going to be easy for me to say, but I like how the book suggested to think of management more as a support role, not the boss role. So again, if you treat it in the military model, there's a hierarchy and people above command you to do some work. But that strips you away from any sense of autonomy, which is, you know, psychologically super important, and it strips you from your ability to act on things immediately, to just solve problems as they arise, and use your knowledge and skill and experience as the person who's on the floor, so to speak, to just do things. I think it's much more useful and healthy as a general rule, of course, to think of it as more of a support role. So, like, again, an inverted hierarchy. Like a good manager is there to clear the way for employees to do their work. Like help them create an environment in which they can just do their work and not have to worry about again those managerial things about handling BS. That's what a good manager allows their employees to do.
I mean, this all comes down to something I want us to talk about in some of the future episodes. It's about, because I don't think we talked about it, about taking the blame. So
yes.
So for me, I am very blame oriented. So what I mean by that is that when I see somebody on my team do something wrong, fail in some respect, you know, do something incorrect, which also of course happens, the first person I'm blaming is myself. I haven't created an environment, or I haven't told them this, or I have forgotten about this, or I have not prepared them for, you know, when you remember, you know, this from the book, which one was that? When there was this Toyota factory.
Mm-hmm. I think it was Smarter, Faster, Better.
Yeah. So the Japanese, you know, boss was apologizing to the employee on the factory plant that he didn't train them well enough for them to make the decision to stop the factory. And he was, you know, begging him for an apology. And that's the thing. A role of a boss, like in my case, or a manager in a company, is to help your experts thrive. I mean, mm-hmm. this is why we always have this joke inside our company. Whenever there is code in Nozbe or in some parts of Nozbe that's been written by me, we always laugh. This is the code written by the best coder in the world. Because we all know in the company...
No one says that. No.
No, it's an ironic thing. You know, it's... Mm-hmm. So everybody knows that I'm actually the worst programmer in the company because I hired better programmers. And that's the whole idea. You know, I was the one who started this, but Nozbe wouldn't have been as advanced and as good as it is now if I kept programming here, right? And that's the thing. And that's the role of bosses, because in many companies, the bosses are actually, or the managers are afraid of hiring people who are better than them because they're afraid, insecure of their position in the company. But it should be the other way around. You should hire better people because they are experts. They are supposed to make decisions. So another thing that comes to my mind is what we always repeat in our company is don't ask for permission, ask for forgiveness. So you go first, you decide first, you are the smart guy. But if you make a mistake, ask for forgiveness because you just went too far. Okay, this happens. But the idea is that what I prefer for you or for anyone in the company is to go beyond, based on your expertise and act on something instead of waiting for me to accept. I mean, can I do this? Michael, can I do this? You know, you're the boss, you have to decide, which is not true because you're the expert, not me.
Yeah, and that not only strips away autonomy from people to have to go with everything to their bosses, but it's also deeply inefficient most of the time. And it takes some trust to say, you know, just do it.
Just do it!
Right? And it takes the hierarchy where people are treated as adults. So it's not this military thing. Like, if you screw up, you'll be in deep trouble. Like, no, it's just do it.
Yes, you can!
You know, use your best judgment to make the right decision, and use your best judgment to think of, like, where are the situations where you should consult people, and if there's a mistake or if other people you know, come up with a better idea, it's fine. It can be fixed, and most of the time that's just more efficient and simpler and better.
Yeah, that's why in one of the Stephen Covey books, I think Seven Habits, he was also emphasizing this notion of empowerment. So really to empower your people to make decisions, empower your people to do things, and you as a manager, you as a boss, as a superior should actually be their servant. You should serve them for them to do a better job. Because this is your job, to prepare level field for them, to prepare the field for them to act and to excel.
Speaking of, let's go to chapter 12, which is called Fire the Managers.
Yeah.
So again, this is all about trust. I think much of the current corporate world really aren't giving people enough credit. People are smarter and more capable to make decisions than many managers think. Like if you strip away the ability and the responsibility for everyone to make decisions, then guess what? They're not going to be good at making decisions. But people are perfectly capable of it. Like, you know, smart people are able to make good decisions just fine. And so, you know, of course, if you have a big organization, you're going to have some level of hierarchy, some level of management, some level of top-down strategy and stuff, and that's fine. But there's much more of the whole management thing that I think is necessary, and especially management in the sense of, in the hierarchical sense, rather than the, you know, rather than the support idea of a manager. And really, like, if you allow people to make many more decisions for themselves and simplify this whole process, like, first of all, this is much more efficient. Second of all, the sense of autonomy is, again, is very, very important. Like, if you feel like you can't control your destiny, like, you're not going to be very productive at all. Like how, like, I don't know about you, but if I was supposed, and especially at school, like, speaking of what you mentioned, like, if I was supposed to do something which I really hated and didn't care about, I was so slow and so bad at it. But the moment I was actually interested in something, or I decided to tackle something, and, you know, if I got guidance and support, of course, but I wasn't, like, actively kind of managed. But if I was able to choose what I worked on based on my understanding of what I need, of what the company or what, you know, my school curriculum needs, and my skills and my interests and the things I want to learn, I would be, and most people would be, far, far, far more productive and happy, which, again, means productive in the long term.
Yeah, I mean, I just we were talking about in the past episodes. We will link to this in the show notes about quarterly offsite. So, like, two mm-hmm. episodes ago, what I did on the quarterly offsite is I did analyze how many projects I'm involved with in Nosby, in our company. And it turns out there are 17 major projects, like, you know, projects, areas of focus or whatever, how you call them. But let's call them projects. 17 projects I'm involved with in Nosby. I think there might be even more, but these are the 17 which I find right now very important for me. Mm-hmm. But then I was trying to find out my role in these projects, like, to make sure that, you know, I know my role. I know my place in these projects. Mm-hmm. And out of 17 projects, only 4 are the projects I am running. So I am, like, the lead of these projects. I am the person who owns the project, who is responsible for these projects. And 7, I'm a supervisor. So I'm a person, like, supervising the project, you know, looking what's up, but actually, no, I'm not running it. I'm not responsible for this project. And then mm-hmm. 6 more, I'm an observer. So I am involved. I am there if they need my feedback, but I'm almost out. I'm, like, just, I'm the guy on the sidelines. Mm-hmm. And my job the last week was to talk to people in these projects and explain to them my role in this project. You know? And it's pretty similar to what we have with TGIF.
So wait, so essentially you fired yourself as a manager.
Exactly. And I had to explain them why. And why it's better like this? Why it's better that I'm not the manager of the project? Mm-hmm. And it was hard. It's like when we said about TGIF that it was hard to convince people not to work on Friday. Like, people still were working on Fridays because, you know, it's kind of strange. You know, they still pay my salary and I'm on Friday. Like, so it's similar here for people to understand that. Like, people feel safer when they feel that there is this hierarchy, there is this boss, you know, because you're the boss, you know, you decide, right? Mm-hmm. On one hand, they feel safer, but on the other hand, it's bad for them, as you said, because they don't have the autonomy, they don't feel so empowered, they don't feel like they are actually reaching their potential. But on the other hand, they feel safer when they have it. So it's really hard, and it takes time to explain to them and to tell them, no. I'm not your manager here. It's your project. You're doing this. If you need feedback or if you need anything for the project, let me know. I'm here. But it's your thing, you know? So what I'm saying is that I had to go through all these projects and talk to people and explain where I am, where they are, just to make sure that they understand my role there. And it was quite a process. And it still is an ongoing process. But that's the thing. It's not... It seems great and you know, trust and everything, but We also have to take in account that people, you know, it's a change and people need time to digest this.
Yeah, it's part of the cultural building process, I suppose, when people are so used to, even if not personally, but just through the teaching of the culture as a whole, that companies and organizations work in a certain way. And a lot of these things, like when you want to empower people and you know, let them self-manage their own work, if you want to give them more autonomy, I suppose it's important to also like really try to teach them that this is good, that this is fine, that you can really do it, that that you ought to you know, lose this anxiety that, you know, what you say, like what happens in a lot of corporations, like people feel safer when there's someone commanding the work, because then like it wasn't my decision, so you can't blame me. But
right,
and so like if you want people to self-manage, and also like you really have to explain to them like you know, don't worry, like mistakes can be fixed, like you're not, you know, your head isn't going to roll downhill.
Yeah, and another thing is that which again, it's pretty radical what we have, because we are no office. We don't have any office. We work totally from home. And by this, I mean, there is no 9-to-5. It's not like you have to work from 9-to-5. You can work, you know, you are required to work 40 hours a week, and not even that, because now we have TGIF, but more or less 40 hours a week. And the idea is that you can work anytime you want. So, for example, in the middle of the day, you want to go for a run, for a jog, whatever. We don't care. You just let us know. I mean, you let know people who you work with that you're out. We have this check-ins on Slack that we check in. But the idea is that people can do it. And the other day, I was at school in the middle of the day, because I had to meet a teacher and for some reason, nothing bad. I just had to be there. And right. and I was there, and somebody who met me there was like, you can do it because you're the boss. And I'm like, no, I can do it because in my company anyone can do it. in my company anyone can, you know, go to school in the middle of the day to get something done, because we are like that.
Well, I'll give you a more extreme example. The whole last week I was away. I was in Berlin, and I was on vacation. I was still working. Now I partly had some time off, but it was spread across the whole week. I was available every day, just a little bit less, which is accounted for. But otherwise, I worked on the train. No one cared. I worked in a different city, in a different country. No one cared. I worked on the way back in the bus. Still no one cared, and it was fine.
Exactly. And so in our company, you don't have to be a boss to have this liberty. And again, it goes back to trust, to trusting people that they will work and they will do the right thing.
Yeah. So it's actually kind of interesting to me that for a book supposedly, you know, preaching radical ideas about running organizations, in some places it didn't go far enough. So it talked about how open offices suck, which seems obvious to us. Yes. I think we talked about it on episode like 5 or 6. We'll link to it. And like, how about no office at all? The book didn't even mention it.
Exactly.
Or it's talked about banning or limiting email, which again, it seems obvious to us, but it didn't go into details. Like it didn't really explain like the possibilities that are available now. That it's not either all email, CC everyone, or be at the office and have meetings.
Mm-hmm.
It's like there's a whole spectrum of tools in between. And like this seems obvious to us because we make Nozbe a tool like that, which helps people organize and communicate in a different way. But there's other things like it, and the book didn't even explore that at all.
No, and judging by this book and by how we work, so we are even more extreme than the examples in the book at some points.
Yeah.
Yeah, and actually coming back to the banning emails, I mean, we've already talked about the pyramid of communication. So we will link to it too. So the one that we revisited, the original one, we talked about it. And there is even an ebook that I wrote that I will share on my blog in December. So it's all about that, the different way. But again, we don't do these things differently in our company because we just want to be rebels. We want to be just different for the sake of being different. Mm-hmm. We do them because this is how we want to work. We want to be trusted. We want to have trust. We want to have liberty. We want to be able to go to Berlin and travel, you know, and work. We want to have that. And why, and this is for me a question of the day, why in so many companies this seems so radical? This seems so strange.
That's a very good question. I think one interesting hypothesis, which the book touched on the beginning, is that we inherited those management methods and culture from the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah.
Which has been really different. Like, it's, you know, no matter how uncool and sometimes even cruel some of this is, it works different when you have some sort of a factory where people really are designed to be replaceable cogs and do the same thing over and over and over again. And there's been this whole movement called scientific management, which has scientific in its name, so it has to be good. And it did work. It did enable much greater efficiency in the industrial companies, but especially now, like, we're talking about something very different. Creative firms, and even if not necessarily creative, then you know, white collar jobs, those have a very, you know, as a knowledge worker in a company who employs knowledge workers, that's a very different use case. And people in industry, like, haven't, I think, questioned enough if those methodologies and this whole hierarchical, you know, do as I say, military-like system is still applicable and actually very good and efficient for anyone, including the organization today in 2016.
Yeah, again, people are not questioning this. And I want to come back to the open offices. I'm sorry, we have to just get back there. I just recently, I read a few articles and I talked to a few people that I know that have companies. And they all would cherish and talk about open offices. And I'm like, are you just ignorant? Or are you micromanager? Or what up? I mean, there are so many articles, so many studies done that open office sucks. That open office is not the way to work, especially for a knowledge worker who has to focus and deep work and stuff on what they are doing. So why people are still doing that? People are still putting open offices first. I mean, building open offices. Is it just for the cost cutting, you know, that you can squeeze more people in a square meter? I mean, what's up? I mean, it's for me, like, when I see new offices, and whenever I see new offices being built, and I'm sometimes invited to some offices of some companies, every time I see that, I'm just like, really? Really? And like, this is 2016. I mean, we've already studied that, you know, the People Work book was published years ago. And why is it like this? Why are people not trying to question that, not seeing the problem, and then just moving forward the old way?
Let's try to answer that question next week.